misery on his fellow man is more powerful than the rich, the famous, the good.
Your operational credo?
Not really. A pastime, nothing more. Most of my business interests are rather benign. Prostitutes, money laundering, stolen cars, credit cards, drugs. Moneymakers, yes, but money is not my true passion. There is, you see, nothing to me so fulfilling as to be a player in the industry in which you ply your trade. I am speaking of the industry of death. I am Russian. Our history is gloom and destruction. There are many sufferers and only a few dealers in suffering. I choose to be one of these. Awful, but preferable to the alternative, yes?
Court said nothing. He was accustomed to working for, with, around, and against total nutjobs. This Russian freak was just par for the course on which he played. Sid continued.
You are my instrument. You are my tool.
If I choose to be. Sidorenko smiled.
Yes. If you choose, which is why I brought you here today.
I thought you brought me here to intimidate me.
Are you intimidated?
Not in the least. Sid smiled.
Ah, well, good thing I have another reason. I have a job.
He took another long sip of his purple tea and leaned forward on his desk as if to get down to business.
If you could kill anyone in the world right now, who would it be?
Greg Sidorenko. Sid laughed. Court did not. Sid's levity chilled and morphed into a slight smile.
The best assassin on the planet wants to kill me. I should be frightened. But I'm not, because once I tell you who your new target is, you will thank me, and you and I will be the best of friends.
Court stood and turned on his heel. Quickly, the four men by the door behind him pushed off the wall and moved closer. Court said to Sid, I'm leaving. These guys try to stop me, and they will get hurt. I get the impression that you might get off on watching that, but you'll have to find yourself a new crew of hoodlums.
President Bakri Abud!
Sid shouted the name. The name echoed in the long hall, and the gray man stopped, dead in his tracks. He did not turn around immediately. Court said, I don't mind difficult, but I insist on the possible. He is an impossible target. He began walking again.
Normally, yes, it would be so, but I have a way in. I have his schedule, I have access to him, and I have a way out.
Court chuckled derisively. Then do it yourself.
I did not say it would be easy, but you can do it. Just listen to my plan. You may still walk away, of course, if you do not like it, but I am sure you will be satisfied.
Court turned and took a few steps back to the desk. The president of Sudan knows he is a wanted man. There is a warrant for his arrest by the International Criminal Court in The Hague for the genocide in Darfur. A hunted man who is surrounded by bodyguards, controls a national police force, an intelligence agency, an army, an air force, a navy, who rules an entire fucking nation. One man cannot get to him. Sid sipped his tea again, slowly.
9 days from now, a Russian transport plane will depart Belarus with military equipment for President Abud's army. The aircraft's destination is Khartoum, the capital. It is a secret flight, no manifest, no customs, no problems. 4 days after that is April 10th, Abud's birthday, which he always spends in his hometown of Suakin, an ancient port city with no military garrison and no major government installations. He will travel there with his close protection detail, 2 dozen or so men, but that is all. His farm will be well guarded, to be sure, but he will go to the local mosque 3 times a day while he is there. In the morning, at dawn, the president will perform the muezzin's call to prayer himself from the minaret of the mosque. Suakin is also surrounded by ancient ruined towers and buildings from the time of the Romans. A competent man equipped with a sniper rifle could find many good places to position himself, yes?
I don't know, said Court, an affectation of annoyance in his voice, but he was listening.
Mr. Gray, I can put $2 million into your bank account tomorrow. I can put you on that transport plane into the Sudan in 9 days, and I can arrange for you to slip out of the airport facility without being detected. I have a man who can drive you to Suakin. 1 week after this, presuming you accomplish your mission, I can similarly arrange for you to get back into the airport with no trouble from the locals and fly back to Russia on a Russian jet. Once home, you will find $2 million in your account.
$4 million, plus whatever cut you are keeping for yourself. You must have been commissioned by a party extremely interested in the termination of President Aboud.
Indeed I have.
Who? Court sat back in the uncomfortable chair.
Sidorenko cocked his head but did not seem too surprised.
It was my understanding that you don't normally care who the payer is, only whether or not the target is worthy of the punishment you are being paid to dole out.
I am not in a very trusting mood after the last contract. Now Sid did show genuine surprise.
Slittery? He was exactly who I said he was.
But the payer was not who you claimed him to be, responded Court flatly. The Russian weighed the comment carefully, his beady eyes nearly turning in on themselves as he thought. His pupils flickered in the light from the burning logs in the fireplace. At first, Gentry thought Sid was going to argue, to feign confusion, to deny. But instead, the Russian just raised his hands in sheepish surrender, shrugged, and said,
"Yes, true. I deceived you. I am sorry. But in response to your question, no less than the Russian government wants Aboud dead. They are putting up the money. They are commissioning the contract. Through intermediaries, of course."
You're lying again. Russia and China are practically the only two countries who do have good relations with Aboud. Why would Russia?
Because Russia's relationship with the Sudan is not as good as China's relationship with the Sudan. 3 years ago, China was given expanded mineral rights in the Darfuri Desert, specifically a large sector called Tract 12A. At the time, Moscow did not care. It was just desert scrubland on the Chadian border.
But China found something, said Court.
Not just something. The most powerful something of all.
Oil.
Yes, a tremendous amount. The Chinese are running all over Tract 12A as we speak, bringing in equipment and experts. Drilling will begin very soon, and Aboud has allowed this. But if Aboud were out of the way, powerful members of the Sudanese Parliamentary Council, people within Aboud's own party, have made it clear to Moscow that the new leadership will throw the Chinese out on their ears and give Tract 12A to the Russians, with an arrangement beneficial to both countries.
If the Sudanese already have an agreement with the Chinese, how can the new president just ignore this? Sidorenko looked momentarily disappointed in his assassin. He answered as if the man's question was dangerously naive.
This is Africa.
Court nodded. And what will this new man do about the genocide in Darfur?
One cannot say for sure. You must know that. But it is logical that without President Aboud, the situation will improve. Aboud has a personality cult under him. His minions do his bidding, and he has no similar successor. Also, Darfur has become important for something other than eradicating a broken and hopeless people. His successor may end the genocide in order to get the UN to look elsewhere for a place to waste Western money.
Sid smiled.
And then my countrymen will come.
Gentry said nothing, just looked off to his left into the crackling fireplace under the portrait of Joseph Stalin. Sid pushed.
So, your act will take a very powerful and bad man off this earth. Further, it is possible that it will go a long way to ending the genocide that has been perpetrated there for the past decade or so.
So you say, muttered Court, still looking into the fire. He knew Sid didn't give a damn about genocide or an evil man walking the earth. It was just his attempt to create excitement for the operation in the mind of his killer, a man Sid no doubt thought to be a goody two-shoes. The Russian behind the desk smiled.
It would be nice if you trusted me, but our relationship is new. Trust will come with time, I feel certain. In the meantime, feel free to look into this matter yourself. Do your own research. I'll have my men take you to a nice hotel. You can spend the evening looking through material I have prepared for you, learning the players, the affiliations, studying the maps. You can come back here tomorrow morning and give me your answer. I am confident you will make the right decision. So, after that, we can immediately begin preparing the operation to fit your requirements.
Court nodded slowly. He asked, Your men, am I to assume they are under orders to remain at my side? Gregor Sidorenko smiled, but his eyes were serious.
You may assume that, yes. St. Petersburg is not a safe place for the uninitiated. They will watch over you.
Then he said, with eyebrows raised and a bit of a mischievous smile on his sunken face.
You will have much to do tonight, but I can provide you with companionship. You've been working hard. There is no shame in a little, shall we say, recreation before beginning your next operation.
A hooker, you mean?
A companion.
Court's shoulders slumped. This was just one more thing to deal with. Sid, don't send a hooker to my door.
As you wish, Mr. Gray. I only thought it would improve your disposition.
He said something in Russian to the guards and laughed along with them when he finished. Gentry did not pick up a word of it. With a wave of his hand, Sid moved on.
Until tomorrow, then.
Chapter 8 Gentry dined alone at a Russian restaurant with no other patrons. He sat in the back, and his minders sat towards the front and turned potential customers away, while the waiters sat by themselves and smoked morosely, but did not complain. After his meal, he was taken to the Nevsky Palace on Nevsky Prospect. The limousine pulled into a loading dock, and five of Sid's men ushered the American through an employee entrance. A staff elevator shot the entourage to the 12th floor, and they continued down a long, bright hall to a corner room. Court was led inside a junior suite and was told his minders would be outside the door and in the next room all night. They would wake him at 7 for breakfast and then drive him back to Sid to give him his answer. A young man with a shaved head closed the door on his way out. For a junior suite, it was opulent, hideously so, and it had clearly been modified by Sidorenko's men. A large seating area led to a narrow balcony. The telephone was conspicuously absent. A hallway off the living room connected to a large bedroom, again with no telephone, which was connected to a large, modern bathroom. Court found a massive stock of toiletries on the vanity, enough for a soccer team to prepare for a night on the town. On the bed, he found a single change of clothes, a silk tracksuit, multicolored, black with a thick trim of purple and a gold V-shape under the velour collar. Obnoxious anywhere in the world except for the countries formerly behind the Iron Curtain. Back in the sitting room, he saw a thick stack of papers, books, and booklets, open and bookmarked, at his service. Presumably, Sid had these put here so he could check out everything the Russian mobster had said about the Sudan, the Russians, the Chinese, and Tract 12A in the Darfuri Desert. Court ignored his homework and instead stepped out on the balcony and watched the heavy traffic clogging the road below. He spent a minute scanning the buildings around, squinting down into the streetlight's glare. He then returned to the bathroom. He scooped up a can of shaving cream and a washcloth, and slipped both inside the pockets of his jacket before stepping back onto the balcony. Deftly, he went over the railing with one leg and then the next. He shimmied down the ornamental drainpipe running along the wall next to the balcony, descended to the floor just below him, swung twice for momentum, and then kicked his legs forward. Immediately upon landing on the 11th floor balcony, he could tell the corresponding room was occupied. Lights were on and clothes were strewn about, but no one seemed to be inside at present. Perhaps, he thought, they were out to dinner. The balcony door was locked. Quickly, he shook the can of shaving cream and then pressed the button to discharge the white foam on the sliding glass door, concentrating it just next to the door handle.
By the time the can was empty, the shaving cream had created a thick covering over the glass the size of a dinner plate. He wrapped his right hand in the washcloth and quickly punched through the thick cream, creating a fist-sized hole with an audible crack, but without the loud shattering sound of broken glass, as the foam both muffled the impact and muted the clanging of glass on the tile floor. He let the washcloth fall from his hand inside the room and then reached in and unlatched the door. He entered the room, checking the clothing in the suitcases and on the floor, and was disappointed to find nothing that fit. Disappointed, but not surprised. Nothing in his life was too easy. Rarely did he pull off any scheme without a single hitch. He left through the door of the room and took the hallway to a stairwell. He descended 4 flights, then walked along another hallway, entered another stairwell, and then exited into the lobby. From here, he found employee-only access that led him to a laundry room. No one paid any attention to him as he entered. 30 minutes after slinging a leg over the balcony on the 12th floor, Gentry was dressed in fresh clothing and entering a tiny guest house a quarter mile from the Nevsky Palace. Court remembered the place from his last trip here. This was the nondescript hotel he'd stayed in back in 2003 with Zach Hightower, team leader of the goon squad, while they waited to take down the cargo ship full of Saddam's guns. Then, as now, it was pretty much a dump, but it was quiet and secluded and at the end of a narrow cul-de-sac that gave a good view of all who came and went. He paid an elderly lady in euros for one night. She asked for a passport, but he shrugged his shoulders and fanned 2 more 20-euro notes. She shrugged herself and took the money. He asked for the second-floor room that faced the street, and she took him up 1 narrow flight of stairs, past the community toilet, and down a shoulder-wide second-floor hallway that creaked with each step. She opened the door with a key and then turned and shuffled back to the staircase without a glance. Court much preferred spending the night here, as opposed to being held captive in his suite at the Nevsky Palace surrounded by skinhead goons. He just wanted to crash, lie in bed, and think about his options as far as making a run for it or working with Sidorenko to get into the Sudan. Maybe even return to his suite in time to thumb through some of the documentation left there to help him make up his mind. Court entered his darkened room and flipped the light switch. Nothing happened. Shithole. He breathed a slight sigh of frustration and felt his way forward, using the dim illumination from the streetlights outside the vinyl curtains. He stepped around the tiny twin bed and drew open the curtains and turned around to survey his room. 5 men faced him in the low light. Still as statues, they were positioned against the walls, but all were within a couple of steps of the gray man. Court's fight-or-flight response kicked on in a single heartbeat, and he attacked. He ducked low and charged the man on his far right, slammed into him as the big man's arms came down hard on the back of Court's head. They crashed into the wall together. Gentry raised his left leg to deliver a groin kick to whoever would surely be attacking from behind. He connected with inner thigh, not a debilitating blow, and while he brought his right palm up hard for an open hand uppercut on the man embracing him, he felt an airborne body hit him hard from the right. Court's palm connected with the first man's face just as he spun away, crashed onto the bed on his back, and felt 2 more men grab his legs and pin them. With his one free arm, he delivered a vicious punch to the solar plexus of a man moving towards him. He felt a Kevlar vest under his dark clothing and knew he'd done no damage. As he struggled and fought, he recognized plainly that the men attacking him were competent. No, they were damn good. They were fast, strong, and well-trained. More important, they worked together and didn't shout or scream or freak out as they fought him. He managed a solid elbow to the side of a smaller man's head, sending him hard against the headboard of the bed and then off the side onto the wooden floor. But the others filled in the gap left by their wounded comrade in an instant, their body weight pinning his appendages to the bed as he wrestled desperately to get free. Looking to his left, he saw one of the men had retrieved something from somewhere in the darkness and approached now with careful confidence. Court saw the sharp glint of thin metal, a stubby piece of clear plastic. Even in the negligible light, he recognized the outline of the syringe. The needle approached, and whatever noxious goo it had been filled with was on its way to his bloodstream unless he could stop the man trying to punch it against his skin. Instantly, Gentry decided these were CIA Special Activities Division paramilitary operations officers, an entire field team, and he knew he was in deep shit. There was a termination order on him. He'd ducked them for years, but they had found him now. Bound to happen sooner or later. Court relaxed his left arm for an instant, gave the man holding it down a moment's respite from the struggle. The ruse worked, and Gentry shot his arm down, under the man's grip and to his side. From here it was free, and he jutted out a fierce jab to the needleman's face. The needleman's head snapped back, and he dropped the syringe as he folded back on his legs and grabbed his nose. But the operator pinning his left leg down reached out and grabbed the instrument off the floor, buried its business end into Court's thigh, and pressed the plunger as Gentry tried and failed to kick free.
"Son of a bitch!"
Court shouted, not knowing what he'd been injected with, but recognizing that, no matter what he did now, he had just lost the battle. He stopped moving immediately,